Let me add my good mornings and thank you for the invitation to speak to you this morning. So much to comment on. Yesterday afternoon, I went to the Great Hole in the Earth down the road, and Roger toured me of the site. And I don't know that this sermon title, Bold, Brave, and Bodacious, I don't know that I need to speak to that, since that's a pretty bold move to essentially tear down what you have and recreate it. So I was quite impressed. And I happened to see the flyer, which I presume most of you have gotten in the mail. Is that correct? And it makes for good reading. I mean, 50 new members since May, and ministers are yielding new surprises in our worship. I should stay for next Sunday to see what that looks like. It's very enticing. The music program is blossoming now. Boy, we can speak to that. Thank you for the gift of music. Our musicians and our choir and Ann and Artesia, those were all wonderful things. It truly did bring us to a holy place. I very much appreciate that. This morning, I came to UCC Church's services early to listen to Roger, to check him out. And you probably have checked him out, but he was in fine fettle this morning with the UCC crowd. It was a fine sermon, and he was talking about money and our relationship with money and how complicated it is. And certainly I can speak to that. You can hear from my little bio that I'll share with you later, my path to leadership in all the denominations I've been a part of, and certainly Unitarian Universalism, started in stewardship and development kinds of roles. So I quite understand this relationship with money. And it seems to me that what we share our gifts with reflects our values. So I would only add, as an outsider, as you're considering your own pledge, how important is this community and what it does for us within that community and the other outside of the community that we're trying to reach. I would just ask you to think about that and match your giving to your values and obviously to your economic condition as well. In fact, when Roger asked me to speak, I was not sure he wanted me to tell my story of how I found Unitarian Universalism or that we wanted to speak about money, because he was intrigued by both of them, I think. But anyway, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for the loan of this free pulpit, and I guess it's also on loan to you for a while as well, while you're building your brave, big, bold, bodacious structure down the road. So about this sermon title, Be Bold, Brave, and Bodacious, frankly, I liked the alliteration. And additionally, I've used a tagline on my emails for many months now that simply says, live boldly, and then my name and my Twitter feed and my Facebook stuff and all that good stuff. And I'm aware that for some of us, living boldly as it relates to our shared liberal and progressive values takes courage. So brave was easy to add to the title. And you know that a series of three, Trinitarian, if you please, captures people's attention. So I added bodacious. It is not a word in my lexicon, but one that I remembered my mother using a lot. And it was only after I offered my sermon title up that I looked up the word bodacious to confirm my understanding of the word. And the most common definitions I found were very good, impressive, noteworthy, remarkable, also sexy and voluptuous. I sort of missed that one. And I can't deliver on that part of it anyway. But interesting to me, it seems to have had more common usage in the South, thus my mother's use of it, I suppose, in the last century. So it's an old-fashioned word emerging from a combination of bold and audacious. So I'm living into this reclaimed word, bodacious, and I so want Unitarian Universalism to be bold and audacious, bodacious, as we go forward. Frankly, these are characteristics I didn't see when I was looking for a liberal religious community, more cold than bold and more insular than bodacious. So let's explore together some ways we might live into that notion of boldness and audacity. So to do that, I want to do two things this morning. I want to introduce myself. You heard a little bit about that in Roger's introduction, so that you have a sense of what calls me to this work, and then talk about governance. That's going to warm your hearts, isn't it? Governance. But governance is a spiritual practice. one that will lead us to bend the moral arc of the universe towards justice, it seems to me, to be bolder, to be braver, to maybe be a bit audacious. So my journey and governance, oddly, are linked. As I travel around the country, I find many people don't understand the role of the moderator in our liberal religious movement. So let me count the ways. As your moderator, I'm privileged to serve the association of over 1,040 congregations. I have three roles in one. There you go again. First, the role that most UUs would understand of the moderator is presiding at our annual general assemblies each June. I facilitate the governance or business component of our yearly four-day gatherings that attract about 4,000, 5,000 Unitarian Universalists. About 1,800 of them are delegates, some off-site, checking in electronically, and they are chosen and charged by their congregations to conduct the business of our association, to hear all the good stuff, to hear and discuss reports, engage in discussions and debates on business resolutions, bylaw changes, statements of conscience, congregational study action issues, and so much more. How many of you have attended a General Assembly in recent years? A few, okay. These are rhetorical questions you need not answer, but I would like you to reflect on. Does this congregation charge the delegates in a Sunday service, sending them off to represent the congregation, and be accountable to the congregation and report back? Do you support them financially in your budget so all would have the opportunity to go as delegates, no matter their economic situation or age? Is the key element of your values to be actively engaged in the democratic process, our fifth principle, coming together annually to vote on important issues? And if you've never attended a General Assembly, you have a great opportunity this coming June, as it will be held in Portland, Oregon, not so far away. It's a great gathering. It's not just the business that we do there. It's a great gathering of strong worship services over the week, great music to uplift us. There's nothing greater than 4,000 or 5,000 Unitarian Universalists singing robustly, interesting workshops to attend, and a great public witness to we can represent ourselves to the broader community. So I hope you'll rent buses and come in great numbers. The second role as moderator that is perhaps less visible is chair of the Board of Trustees, which meets quarterly each year in person and many times during the year by video conference. And in my third role, I serve as chief governance officer for the association, steering the board and senior staff into generative discussions about the future of our religious movement. Governance, when practiced well, when seen as a spiritual practice, is the process that enables our dreams, our vision. It provides guidance as we build the arc of the moral universe towards justice, to move into that desired, beloved community that Dr. King called us to. As you heard, the moderator is a volunteer position, traditionally a layperson, that now serves a single six-year term, so I'm already a lame duck in my second year. I want to share my own story of finding Unitarian Universalism. It informs the work I do to steer our association towards that radically inclusive, beloved community that we long for, and that you've implied with your vision statement on your own website. I grew up in a working, poor household in the Jim Crow South, in the southwest mountains of Virginia, the sixth child of a single mother. My radical grandfather, a social gospel Methodist, influenced me early in life. He would identify as a universalist today. My mother would decamp to his home in North Carolina when we would hit difficult economic times, which came fairly frequently. And under his tutelage, I was encouraged to speak out against the evils of segregation and the errors of theology he observed in almost all white Christian denominations of his time and his place. I married a friend I met in middle school. I remind you, I didn't marry her while in middle school. And we raised two sons and a daughter and now have six grandchildren. We have enjoyed a privileged life. She, a registered nurse and OBGYN working with indigent and at-risk young women, and I a career with IBM that you heard for over 30 years. We lived and worked all over the United States and Asia, always seeking, always joining the most liberal and progressive Christian congregation we could find. I was a restless and questioning soul, evolving my own humanist views and challenging the relevance of organized religion in an increasingly unjust world. And as our family moved about and sought a progressive religious community, we never encountered a Unitarian Universalist in all of the places we lived. Virginia, New Jersey, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Missouri, Kansas, Georgia, Tokyo, Connecticut. I'm pretty sure UUs were around, but no one seemed to be out. No one seemed to be bold and brave, much less audacious. We never noticed a Unitarian Universalist campus. We never read a Unitarian Universalist ad. And we were never welcomed by a Unitarian Universalist at any of the many progressive organizations we were part of. Urban League, NAACP, National Organization for Women, Planned Parenthood, and progressive political gatherings. People identifying themselves as atheists to Zoroastrians introduced themselves to us and invited us to know more about their beliefs. But we never met anyone who identified as a Unitarian Universalist in all of those decades. Not one. Liz and I returned to the South with a great many reservations. We moved to Beaufort, South Carolina in 1997. It was there that a Presbyterian minister finally introduced us to Unitarian Universalism. She said, "You need to be over there with those people." Those people were a small group of UUs meeting in kitchens, displaced from their natural habitat in the Northeast, who were organizing a Unitarian Universalist congregation in this small southern town. In 1999, the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Beaufort became an affiliated congregation of the UUA. Liz and I had found our religious home after searching for over three decades. As brand new UUs, we were founding members of an emerging congregation, and I'm proud to say later, a breakthrough congregation. Now, that would be a pretty interesting little story if it ended there. We were organized in 1999 in October. In December, I was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer and suggested a 10-month palliative treatment of chemotherapy while I got my affairs in order, which I did. The prognosis was 95% chance of death in 1 year and a 99% chance of death in five. It was 15 years ago. So I'm undergoing chemotherapy, mind you. I'm tired. I'm weak. And the nominating committee came and said, "Could you be our president?" I said, "Could we wait a year to see if I'm alive?" And they said, "Yes, we'll wait." So the next year they came. They did the mirror under my nose. I fogged it, and thus I became the president for five years. Friends, hear me. Unitarian Universalism saved my life, but it took three decades for me to find us. And it shouldn't take a Presbyterian minister to be the voice for Unitarian Universalism. Our responsibility as religious liberals, who are all about changing the world to a place of more justice and more love, is to share the good news of this faith. And we must be bold, brave, and audacious as we go about spreading the news. This means being seen, often in our yellow standing on the side of love paraphernalia. It means our websites have to be very engaging and that tell who we are, what we do, and why it matters. Your website seems to be pretty good, but I'd ask you to look at it again. Does it tell casual people why it matters to be a Unitarian Universalist or come and join with us? It means adapting to the changing times and becoming adept and agile in using social media to reach people like me that took 30 years. A P.S. to this story, that Presbyterian minister is now a fully fellowshipped UU minister in Oregon. She led Liz and me to Unitarian Universalism, and we called her forward too. That experience as a congregational leader in a religious community that aspired to be radically welcoming led me to attend and then serve on the faculty of a leadership school. That was followed by service in the district, as you heard. All of those experiences confirm my belief that the world would be a better place if we could be that bold, prophetic voice in the public square. By being bold in our outreach, we could attract more and more people to the vision of beloved community. Those leadership experiences also demonstrated the power of generative leadership when undertaken by a governance structure, congregational and district boards, and now the association board, that experiences governance as a spiritual practice. And let me explain what I mean by generative leadership. It occurs before you talk about strategy and long-range plans and executing that plan. Generative leaders ask, what problem are we solving? To gain insight into the organization, identity, and purpose. Who should we be serving? How can we be that prophetic voice in the public square? That's generative thinking. At the congregational level, generative discussions, in my experience, led to a long-range plan that would get my congregation focused outwards towards the Gullah culture of the Sea Islands of South Carolina. Hit me up at the coffee hour, and I'll tell you more about that. And there's a Unitarian Universalist history in the Sea Islands of South Carolina in the early months of the Civil War that's quite interesting. That outward focus and interfaith activity set us on a path of becoming a multiracial, multi-congregation in a small, conservative southern town. The district board hosted an East Coast people of color gathering in our community that resulted in people who had felt estranged from leadership and not well understood coming back into leadership. That early congregation of 30 boldly and perhaps bodaciously embraced a path to full-time settled ministry first, and then followed by the acquisition of property. Moreover, the leadership resolved to become a multiracial, multicultural, and multigenerational congregation, and is now realizing that dream as a mosaic maker congregation, following in the path of All Souls Tulsa, where I once lived, in the All Souls Washington, and the Richmond congregations, all mosaic maker congregations, and others. At the district level, generative thinking led to reassessing and then redirecting our anti-racism, anti-oppression, multicultural efforts that led to changing the name of the district from the Thomas Jefferson District to the Southeast District. That's a discussion over a martini. Moreover, the district board moved to accept the ends of our association as their own and reached out to three other districts in the southern region to consider a new form of governance that would allow over 50 trustees sprinkled over four districts then involved in governance to shift their emphasis to ministry. This April, delegates to the four districts in the southern region will vote to dissolve their individual governance structures in favor of the association governance structure. Certainly a bodacious thing to consider and commit to, and a whole lot of trust. At the association level, the Board of Trustees and administration are looking to the future and assessing how to enhance the process of a congregation or community entering into covenant to grow our movement. We're examining ways to accelerate the interfaith cooperation that will lead to mutual support of progressive social actions. Other initiatives include expanding the Mosaic Maker program that I alluded to for congregations that are on an intentional path of multiculturalism, and Mosaic Makers will be featured at this year's General Assembly. Organizing the Interfaith Commit to Respond initiative on climate justice, curating the good things that congregations are doing rather than trying to be the font of all information in Boston. Growing our Luminary Leader Program for youth. Witnessing with others in Black Lives Matter activities. And then, of course, the Standing on the Side of Love initiative. And of course, the move to 24 Farnsworth was a significant decision and certainly a bold one to move off of Beacon Hill. And it has changed the culture of collaboration and creativity in the building. I hope you get a chance to go to Boston to see it. It's in the Innovation District. It's an interesting neighborhood. It's an old mattress factory that's been reimagined as a Unitarian Universalist headquarters. It was LEED certified at the platinum level, and it's a great place to work and collaborate. It's changed the ethos of the place from producer of content to curator. So the most exciting things are coming out of congregations, not the Unitarian Universalist Association. We're working on a website that's more accessible, more interactive. We're imagining how to create interactive dialogue to hear from our sources of authority and accountability, our member congregations, current and future generations of UUs, our history and heritage, the vision of beloved community, and the spirit of life, love, and the holy. Quoting from our ends, and it's not the board's ends, they're ends that maybe some of you participated in. Thousands of people worked at Appreciative Inquiry and others to craft these ends, the part of which says, a healthy Unitarian Universalist community that is alive with transforming power, moving our communities and the world towards more love, justice, and peace. Those are not just pretty aspirational words. They are our shared vision, board and staff and congregations, as we fund and assess programs, grow ministries, encourage entrepreneurial communities that are popping up, and the use of our prophetic voice in the public square. This is the work we are called to do and hold ourselves accountable to do. So my call this morning to this congregation is this. Charge your leadership to think of governance not simply as a geeky look at bylaws, Robert's rules, and maintaining minutes. Who wants to do that anyway? But as a spiritual practice that deeply assesses whether this is a community alive with transforming power and moving our community and the world towards more love, justice, and peace. What does that look like in Sacramento, California? Think about how we can be bolder in radically welcoming the stranger, the other, the economically distressed, the politically conservative. Act bravely as we seek interfaith dialogue with those progressives of other faiths, but also with those with whom our theology might disagree. I'm talking to myself here and some of my relatives. Consider being bodacious with those standing on the side of love, yellow shirts at local events and markets and fairs, not just at the MLK and Pride parades. And I ask that you share your gifts with other congregations as we seek together to move our communities and the world towards more love, more justice, and more peace. May it be so.